Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Hustle and Flows. I am your host, Marcus the Game Changer. I will be joined tonight by my man, Sekou. Tonight, we're going to get into everything. It's been a while since I've been on the air. So for all the diehard RSG fans, you hear my voice. Probably a little foreign to you because I haven't been out here in a minute. Been a busy basketball season, just wrapped up. So now I have a little bit more free time. So I'm back in the fold and getting connected again. I got my man Sekou in the house. We're going to hit you off with an episode of Hustle and Flows tonight. Looks like, you know, I usually handle the producerial duties for the RSG crew. And I'm looking at our board, and it's bare, man. I got to get back on my grind and get these guys hooked up again with some sound.
Get
I'm
on it, bro.
Board, like, we don't got no intro. We don't got no drop.
Just start. I can start beatboxing. You just start spitting a verse, bro.
You know? I'm looking, man, this board, man, take me back to the old days when we ain't had much, looking in the cupboard and there's not a whole lot in there. But we're going to rock it out anyway. Again, we appreciate your patronage. You could have been anywhere in the world, but you're here with us. RSG Hustle and Flows, me and my man Sekou. Sekou, man, it's been a minute since you and I have had the chance to hook up. Just what's been going on with you, man?
Oh, man, where to begin? Well, let's see. I moved to Antarctica, and now I'm playing. I'm still down here in Austin, Texas, working, grinding, trying to create some crazy kids, having my hopes regarding the Knicks raised and then quickly dashed right around Christmas. So, you know, they always do me the favor of at least not stringing me along until the new year. And that's it, man. And listening to a lot of music and watching a lot of Wakanda memes on the internet. That's pretty much what I've been doing for the last month, I'd say.
Yeah, we're going to dig into that, man. Black Panther, man, it's a phenomenon. And we're going to talk about that. You brought up the Knicks. And, oh, man, I feel bad for you. Like, so you guys got Porzingis, and he's the real deal. I think he's the real deal. I think he's a really good player. It sucks that he ruined his ACL. Now you guys got to figure out if you're going to tank or not. Really, the only option is to tank.
Figure out. That's a done deal. What are we even talking about? Like, we're starting.
But this is the Knicks.
It's a new day.
When everybody else is digging, they zag, you know.
It's a new day. Scott Perry, we trust. Phil's out of here. He's doing peyote in Montana somewhere. Now we got a guy that actually understands modern basketball in there. And post All-Star break, they've pretty much been like, so all you young guards, let's see what you got. So Trey Burke, have at it. Moutier, go. Nealakina.
Yeah. Yeah.
See what you got. And so we're going to lose a lot of games. That's fine. But at least we'll know what we got with these cats. So I actually believe the future might be brighter than the average Knicks fan.
And I agree with you. That was going to be kind of the end of my rainbow, was that I actually think you guys are on a path, and it looks like management has a plan, which, you know, y'all haven't been there in a while. But just like having a plan, like not even like the playoffs or anything like that, but just like, we got something. Let's work.
Yeah.
Let's see this through. Let's work it out. Let's massage this out and see where it goes. So
I will say,
you know,
I will
not,
say this one thing.
Boom.
I will say this one thing that it probably bothers me more than anything else I read or listen to, which is that you can't rebuild in New York because the fans are impatient and they don't understand. And it's really just the complete opposite. If there is one place where you can say, like, look, here's the plan. We're going to start these young guys. We're going to see what we got. The Knicks fans eat that up. I mean, I look at war of guys in the G League on the Westchester Knicks. Like, I can eat up some, like, here's potential. Here's what he's doing better. I listen to, like, three Knicks podcasts that just talk about breaking down incremental improvements in the young guys. The city can get behind a young team that's not good, but at least heading in the right direction. So this, you can't rebuild the New York thing is, it's just, I don't know who started it. I don't know why people keep saying it. It's just not true. So anytime I hear that, I write an angry email and I fire it off to that media source immediately. That's all I got. Rant over. Sorry, I'm done.
Sometimes you got to get those things off your chest, man. So you said the Knicks kind of broke your heart around Christmas. And then that takes us into the new year. Now, every year around the holidays, you usually drop your hip-hop year in review. And in true form, you did so again this year. You kind of twisted it a little bit and went with a football theme. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so it was this was an interesting football year. I don't know what your stance was on the Kaepernick. It's been so long since we've had a podcast. Like, these things that were dominating the narrative have just, like, happened since the last time we spoke. But in any case, I was getting all kinds of peer pressure from all kinds of folks about, like, you got to boycott the NFL. You know, this, if we can't do this, you know, we'll never have nice things. So I kind of just stopped watching, not with any real hopes of protest. I just was like, all right, I guess I can stop watching if it'll get people to stop yelling at me on GroupMe. And in so doing that, I kind of, you know, missed it. But, you know, the playoffs came back, and I was like, all right, are we good? Like, so, all right, so we're in. So then I started watching again. And one of the themes from just reading and what have you of this year was just quarterbacks just went down left and right, getting injured. And so there was a lot of focus just on an offensive line and how important it is to have a good offensive line. Otherwise, you know, your team doesn't have a shot. And so in going with that, I decided to utilize an offensive line theme, you know, and the basic premise was if I'm going to put together an offensive line made up of albums from 2017, who would be in which positions and why. And so that allowed me to kind of deep dive into football again. And I got to, you know, read, and for research purposes, I had to watch NFL. And then you know, kind of wrote it based on that.
I dig it. I dig it. Now, I had no issues with the albums that you chose.
Sure.
But I do want to get your opinion on some albums that did make the list, but albums that I thought were really good, respecting your taste and your ear, just what you thought of these albums. Two albums in particular that I really, really enjoyed in 2017. The first one is Vince Staples' Big Fish. First, did you listen to it?
Yeah.
What'd you think?
Someone must have sent me something in November, like around the time. Now, I've been doing this now for like 14 years, so now I get people that are like, hey, before you start writing your thing, you need to listen to this, this, and this. And so someone sent me Vince Staples, and I've never really been into his music. I can't even give you a good reason. It just, I listen to it, and I'm kind of like, it's fine. It's not terrible. It's not great. This album, I will say, I was able to listen to more than once. Normally once is and I'm out. And he's creative and he's smart. He's legit, you know, trying to he's trying hard to put together like a nice nice body of work. I just, you know, at the end of the day, I was like, I would feel like a fraud because I didn't really like it, but I do recognize that it is good. I almost pulled it out and put it in for another album, but at the end of the day, there were no songs there that I was just like, oh, I love listening to this song. I can listen to this thing on repeat. I'm assuming you have some songs like that, and if you do, then I'm all ears, but nothing on the album grabbed me the way the songs on these other albums did.
Yeah, no, I can dig that. I can dig that. Vince, you know, this project was good. I've liked some of his other projects better than this one in particular. But I did enjoy this one as far as this year goes. And it's interesting that I think we all have those artists where it's kind of like, you know, I get why people like them. I get why people enjoy. Like Tyler, the Creator, is that way for me. Like,
yeah.
I get why people like Tyler. I get it. And his music is pretty good, but I just don't want to listen to it. You know what I mean? Like, I can acknowledge that. And funny, like, one of the greats is I'm like that with Eminem. I don't own an Eminem album. Not a single one. I've heard them all ad nauseum, but I don't own a single one, and I don't have a desire to own a single one because I get it. Like, he's dope. He's one of the – he's a great. Like, he's one of the best. But I just don't want to listen to his music. I mean, like, I can appreciate his skill and his ability, but I've just never – like, I love my mama. So, you know, early Eminem just doesn't resonate. Like, that's what drove kind of, like, his whole steeze at the beginning was, like, this anti kind of counterculture white boy angst kind of deal. And I just I couldn't relate, but I got it. Like, I got it. Like, dude's dope. Like, he's tight. But I'm just not in on that. Like, that's cool. Like, it comes on. That was the other thing. It was so accessible. Like, I just had no desire to delve into it any more than at all. Like, every time I get into, you know, as a teenager, every time I got into somebody's car, you know, Eminem's playing. You know,
yeah.
And so it's just like, okay. You know.
Yeah,
like,
we're coming up on 20 years of his debut album. It'll be next year, which is wild to me. I don't know what to say. I did not expect that. I think there's a lot of people that don't like him just because they don't like him. So
right.
So I get that. But as so let me ask you this. How do you feel about Royce?
Royce the 5'9", I enjoy. I actually enjoy Royce. So Bad Meets Evil, I wasn't really into. I listened to it like twice. And I was like, okay, this is cool. They're dope. Both of them are really good. I enjoy Royce's, like, Royce has one song that I always really love, and I had this, like, raw cut version of it on a tape. And then, like, it was a song, Let's Grow, that was on, I think it was on,
that's
like, a
classic.
Sound Bombing joint. But, like, I got, like, a rough cut of it that was just Royce. It wasn't glossy. It was a little bit dirtier, more underground sound. His flow was a little bit less, like, precise on the track, and it was just dope. And then, like, the Sound Bombing joint came out, and it was just super cleaned up and super mixed and glossy, and it was just kind of like, this isn't the same. Like, you know what I mean? Like, the hook was super clean, and it's like, eh. And so, but, like, I've always loved Royce going back to Boom and his work with Primo. And so Prime, and we're going to talk about this in a little bit when we talk about stuff that we're looking forward to in 2018, the last Prime joint I really enjoyed. I really enjoyed that from Royce. And I've enjoyed the Slaughterhouse joints that Royce has been a part of. So I've enjoyed that stuff, and I have a great appreciation for Royce. And like I said, I think Eminem is dope. Like he's a killer MC. I don't know. His albums have just never really resonated with me. But I don't think they're bad albums. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think they're bad albums. I don't think the music is necessarily bad. I just don't want to listen to it a whole lot.
Not bad at all. It also doesn't age well. I pulled out.
Yeah.
What was the second one? Eminem.
Marshall Mathers.
Yeah, Marshall Mathers LP.
Yeah.
And in the moment, I mean, you realize just how much of a pop star he was, because his stuff was dope and it was wordy, but it was also super relevant. I mean, it was like he's picking fights with Justin Bieber and NSYNC, and then when you listen to it 15 years later, you're almost like, oh man, this is like hilarious. It's not like, it's hard to take the album serious because it's got so much just random early 2000s self-important nonsense, right? That you realize now was just like a blip on the screen. So some of his stuff has not aged well, but the first album to me is just still. It's still amazing. It's like, it reminds me of watching South Park. And it's something about where you are. The first time I watched South Park and I realized, like, so there are cartoons that do this where they murder people and make terrible jokes and, you know, all this other stuff. And I was like, oh, you know what? I like this. And that's how it was first time listening to Eminem. I was like, oh, people can rap about doing, you know, hardcore prescription drugs. And, killing killing their baby's mother. It's like, that's, I didn't think that was possible, but you know what? It's not bad. And I'm assuming he's not serious. So fine. I'm in. So that was a lot of my introduction. So I think where I was in my life had a lot to do with me kind of being like, all right, I'm open to this. Whereas if Eminem had come out 3 or 4 years earlier, I probably would have been like, no, I'm good.
Yeah. So yeah, that's, and I can see how Vince can fall into that. But I enjoy Vince a lot. I enjoy his work. Another one that I wanted to kind of pick your brain on was Big Crit's Forever in a Day. Forever is a Mighty Long Time. Which I really, really dug. And like Crit has always been just like, he's been one of my like now favorites. His last couple of projects, I've kind of been like, but his first couple mixtapes, we're on constant repeat.
That was like a double. It's hard saying double CD when I haven't bought a CD in like a decade, but it was like a double. What do they call it now? Double feature?
I don't know. I guess a double project? I don't know.
Two back-to-back mixtapes.
Right.
Yeah, so I did not really listen to this all the way through. I've listened to some of it through, like, playlists, and there's been one or two here, and I was like, oh, that's good. And then I think now I'm looking at it. I pulled this up, and I was like, this is two CD. I'm not getting through this. It's not going to happen. So I have not really listened to it. Is it a strong – are you staking your reputation on this being like a far above average Crit performance?
I wouldn't say it's far above average. I would say it's very solid. And for me, it was a good return to what I thought – a sound that I thought he had gotten away from, which I thought was a sound that was unique to him. And he kind of came back to it, which is like a funky – 70s vibe. It's like a 70s vibe, funky, with mixed with some UGK, mixed with some trap type of sonic vibe to it, with some Outkast, Goody Mob type of content and lyrical thought process that I enjoyed, that kind of harkened back. I'm a Dungeon Family neophyte for sure. That harkened me back to some of those Golden Age Dungeon Family records that came out in the early 2000s, late 90s. And his music kind of was a echo of that. And this kind of got back to that. And he had kind of gotten away from that on his last two projects. It just wasn't funky. Like, there just was no sort of a soul or a bounce to him. Just too mechanical, too clean, too washed. And he kind of got back to that on this one. And so that's what I enjoyed, was that, like, seeing, it's kind of like, you know, seeing a superhero that you follow kind of go astray and kind of, even though it may not be his best performance, he kind of gets back to his roots a little bit.
Is it better or worse than Cadillacica?
Much better, my opinion.
Okay.
Yeah, much better. I wasn't a fan of Cadillacica. I wasn't a fan of that. When you talk about, like, not wanting to hear that more than once, that was me with that one. Like, as a Big Crit fan, I was like,
okay.
Nah, I don't have to listen to this again. It's even worse when it's an artist that you enjoy, because you're like, nah, dog, don't fall off.
Yeah.
You know, you got to root for the guy, and you're like, oh, you're going to fall off, aren't you?
It's going to happen. Ebbs and flows.
Yes. Yeah. So,
all right, I'm gonna listen to that. I'm traveling tomorrow. This is going to be on my traveling list. Crit.
I think you'll enjoy it. Right. Yeah, I think you'll enjoy it. I don't know if it'll be in your top, but I think you'll dig it. He has a couple of songs on there where I'm just kind of like, it's kind of like the, and it's a pet peeve of mine personally. I just don't want to hear rappers rap about how hard it is to be rappers. You know what I mean? I get it. The industry is the industry, and you have to do stuff that you may not want to do creatively. I get that. Yeah, I know. I'm an adult. I get it.
It's hard to tell that. Yeah, it's hard to tell that story in a new way. The problem is that story is as old as probably Big Crit is. And so I was like, if you're going to tell that story, you need to be telling me some part of this industry or some part of the way this game is set up that I was unaware of before. But if you just tell me, like, yo, this is hard to get a deal, money's funny, contracts fall through.
Give me some sort of metaphor where you're like, I'm gonna be like, oh, man, he's talking about the record industry. He's not talking about, you know, whatever he was talking about.
Yeah.
But don't just come straight forward at me like, man, it's hard being a rapper. Okay, yeah, I dig it, man. It's hard being everything. I'm a grown up, man. I got, you know what I mean? We all got problems, man. Every profession is a little bit, you know, stuff nobody can totally do what they want to do. You know,
please direct all you aspiring rappers out there, please direct all of your ire, not to me. I did not say that. I think being a rapper is tremendously hard. Please direct it to Marcus. That's all him. That's his take. Because I see already it's easy,
too.
Huh? Oh, you don't want to hear that anymore. Okay.
Hey, listen, come work with some of these kids this high school I'm at. Then holler at me. I ain't trying to hear none of that. There's a lot worse gigs you could have, bro.
True indeed. I'm not dying on that hill. I'm with you. You got it.
So, yeah, man, yeah. So, speaking of which, you know, Black Panther has come out, Marvel's Black Panther has come out and completely just taken over the conversation amongst Black folks on social media for the last week and a half, 2 weeks or so. You can't go anywhere without somebody posting a Wakanda pic,
Wakanda,
a Black Panther
forever.
Pic.
Forever.
So, I'm a comic book geek to my core, particularly with Marvel. Now, Black Panther isn't a book I read a ton of. I'm more of an X-Men. You know, in the late 90s, mid-90s, mm-hmm. I kind of got hipped onto, you know, Marvel and the comic book scene through the Saturday morning X-Men comic cartoons.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of got me intrigued because there was the whole, like, man, mutants are kind of like Black folks.
Yeah.
You know, like, people don't like them. You know, you got one that's kind of like he wants to integrate and be peaceful. And then you got one, Magneto, who's kind of like, F that, we superior.
Yep.
Let's do what we got to do. You know, and so that kind of type of story resonated with me at the time. And so I kind of really dug into the comics and got deep into it and kind of versed myself in it. And so, you know, I know a lot about, you know, Black Panther peripherally through his comic book relationship with Storm, who is the key figure in the X-Men comics. And so, but I'm not deep. Like, I don't have a lot of Black Panther books in my collection. I have a pretty solid collection of stuff. So this movie, I was excited about just the movie in general before any visuals or anything like that had dropped. I was kind of excited about the concept of a Black Panther movie since the Avengers Civil War flick that came out last year.
Yeah.
But I didn't. I had no idea. I had no idea how dope. And a shout out to Ryan Coogler and the whole team that put that movie together. I enjoyed it thoroughly. It was a whole different level. And with the movie, the hype built. And so as much a part of the movie as the experience of going to see the movie. And so, like, how did you take in the movie itself? Like, did you go to, like, any, like, all-Black showings or any private showings or anything like that?
So I've already seen it twice. I don't know how many times you've seen it. How many times have you
seen it? I've
seen it
twice.
Already?
I will see it three times. I'm going to see it a third.
Yeah. I got one more. I got to do 3D. I haven't done 3D yet. And my 7-year-old son just told me today he's in. So I was like, okay, it's got, you know, like, it's got some scary stuff in it. Like, he was a little skittish on the original Star Wars, like A New Hope. Like, when Darth Vader starts choking a dude out, he's like, Dad, I don't think I want to watch this anymore. I was like, are you prepared for, like, straight-up murder? Because that's what you're going to see. He's like, no, I think I'm ready. So we're going again.
Okay.
I had all kind of plans. to do this. So here in Austin, there is a friend of mine who put together this like double feature Black Panther movie plus Black Panther, the cartoon that's not even out in the United States yet. So he like somehow got a copy
of
this thing from Europe and got and was able to show it in an Alamo down here. And so it was like two odd things. So I was like, man, I'm just straight going out on this. Now, of course, this was, you know, 2 months ago. I have my tickets. I'm in. And then I had a work trip pop up. So then I was out of town scrambling. Like, so me and my wife were out. She came with me. And so we ended up buying tickets just at an Alamo where we were. Because I was like, I at least got to go opening night. So we went on Friday night. And I had, you know, the Black Panther shirt I had bought 3 weeks prior online because I had to, you know, be different. I did not go in the traditional African garb just because a lot of reasons. We don't have to get into it. I didn't do it. I love for everyone that did. I was like, I kind of wear T-shirts to movies, so I'm a T-shirt guy, so I'm just going to roll with that.
Okay.
But it was amazing to sit in this movie and see the folks come out, and there was a buzz. I mean, I can't remember the last time being in a movie and 30 minutes before it, the place is buzzing. Like, people are excited, taking pictures. They're, you know, people who don't know each other are just talking nervously. It was wild. And I my wife is not a big movie Marvel kind of, like, she doesn't really know the story, hasn't seen a single other Marvel Universe movie. So she had 10 or so questions that she really needed answered during the movie. So I almost divorced her on the spot. But we made it through. I was like, if you could talk to me one more time during this movie, it's going to be a wrap. But, I kind of was just like, I didn't watch any previews. I didn't listen to any news or buzz about it. I wanted to go in as clear. I do this with albums too. Like, I don't want to know half the songs on an album when I hear it for the first time. I just want to go in clean. So I kind of did that. And so I wasn't home and wasn't in my hometown. I was kind of on foreign soil, which is why I had to see it again. But it was just like you said, I had high expectations. I was nervous at how high my own expectations were. I was like, oh, this movie's going to have to disappoint me. Like, I'm way too amped, and it eclipsed them, which is, it really incredible. It's like LeBron's first game in the NBA. Like, the hype is so crazy. You're like, well, there's no way he can eclipse it. And then he comes out and you're like, no, he eclipsed it. Like, he was
everything
we thought it would be. Like, Cam Newton's first game, right, in the NFL. It was like, did he just do that? Yep, okay. Yeah. So that was my takeaway from the actual watching experience.
Yeah, so I had my watching experience was there were a couple of private showings by some folks who rented out theaters here in the Madison area, and they were billed as like, this is a black only space, so like we want to have a black only space with just black folk coming together, because in Wisconsin, you know, it's just hard for us to have our own spaces and enjoy some things that are for us. With each other. And so there were a couple of different folks who were influential in the community who rented out theaters, set things up. And so, you know, it was the same type of situation. Everybody's decked out in something with some kente on it. You know, I had on a little something, my wife had on a little something, you know, so we go out and it was a celebratory vibe. Like, we made it. Don't know what we made it to, but we felt like we made it. I mean, you're high-fiving people, and you're giving, like, people the nod and the point, and you know what I'm saying? You dapping up people that you don't even know, but y'all about to have this experience together. And it was just a really unifying feeling, man. And, you know, so then you go into the theater, and, you know, beforehand, I had prepped my wife. Like, so we got our tickets months in advance as well. And so I had prepped my wife. I was like, listen, when we go to this, I know, like, you don't know a whole lot about it. She hasn't seen very many Marvel movies either. And she is not into Marvel comics at all. She didn't even know, like, the story. So I was like, you know, like, a couple weeks out, I was like, all right, I'm going to give you a quick primer. And you got to remember this. Because when the movie starts, I ain't answering no questions. I was like, I am not answering no questions. So, you know, we went over everything. I kind of told her the background story, the Dora Milaje, all this other stuff. Like, so this is kind of like what we're going to see, right? Explain what Wakanda, mm-hmm. what vibranium is, and all this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, when we got there, it was just crazy because there were so many people who were like, you know, I don't even know what this movie is about, actually. But I'm here to be with my people.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And,
it's like the Super
you know,
Bowl.
When the movie got yes. But once the movie got started, to be in a theater full of black folks watching this movie, and I've seen it twice. So I saw it once with my wife. We went out, had a date night, made a date night of it. We went out and saw it with, you know, in a black only space. And then the next day I went and saw it in just a regular theater with my children, with my 12-year-old, my 11-year-old, and my 9-year-old. And the just contrast between how much of this movie was for us in a way that only we are going to get it. You know what I mean? And there's so many little shout-outs to blackness in this movie that when you watch it in a white-only, or not in a white-only, but with mixed company, mm-hmm. and you don't get the same reactions, and there's stuff that they're not reacting, and you're kind of looking around like, anybody get that? And the night before you went and saw it with in a black only space and everybody's like went, hey auntie, and everybody's dying. You know what I mean? Just like, don't sneak up on me, colonizer. What are you doing? You know, little stuff like that. Where or even how to and I call them the bruhs, how the Jabari come in barking. It's like, is he a kill?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, they're acting real Q-ish right now.
Yeah.
And just all those little subtle nods to the culture that are in there that you realize, like, white folks don't even get this. Like, y'all are really not understanding what just happened. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's eye-opening, and it's also, it makes you appreciate it in a way that, you know, you just, like, I saw a meme. Obviously, the memes became a thing, but the most relevant meme I saw was like, you know, coming out of Black Panther, you ask yourself, is this how white folks feel watching every other movie?
Like, this is what 300, this is what
completely
Braveheart.
Validated, you know?
Like, I get it now. I get it. I get why y'all will literally lose your mind after coming out of Braveheart. Now I see.
Right. Right. Yes. And it's just like, okay, I understand. But yeah, and when you talk about just the movie itself and the expectations that, so I saw some of the trailers and then I cooled on. Once I got a vibe of like, wow, this is going to be something. Like, because that was my thing. Like, how are you going to make this come to life?
Yeah.
In a way that is both like authentic to the story, but also it means something larger. And so that was well done by everybody who was involved as far as creating the visuals and making this whole thing like jump out at you. Cause it was just a beautifully, shot movie. Just from a movie, just as a general movie, it was wonderfully executed. And then when you get into all the themes and, the underlying, conflict and the battles within it, it just speaks to your experience as an African American in ways that not very many other movies, particularly in this genre, have ever spoken to our experience. So let's
address the elephant in the room. You have, I mean, how many think piece / Facebook posts did you read about how this movie actually is bad in that it depicts African-American males, like Killmonger's character is this, and it's problematic here, and it's problematic there. I mean, every movie has problems. But, I mean, there were just some straight-up takedown think pieces that people must have shared a gajillion times right after. And so what was your – I have my own thing, but I'm curious, how did you consume all of that?
So I read a couple. right afterwards, because that's a part of the experience, I think, is kind of looking to see, like, okay, how are people responding to this? How is the intellectual mafia out there taking this in? And so, you know, I read a couple pieces on it. You know, it seemed like there was a flow. Like, so the first couple of pieces were just like, this is amazing, this is awesome, this is a great movie. And then there's always the counter vibe to that,
backlash.
Right? Because I want you, but it's also, I get it, you're a writer, you want people to click, so you can't just go and love the movie too, because I already read one that said that they love the movie. I don't want to hear why you love the movie. I get it, you love the movie, I loved it too. So then there was the wave of counter, the backlash, or this isn't a good movie, this, that, and the other. And so then I read a couple of those, and I'm like, okay. I began to, like, think about, okay, so what are they saying, and how are they breaking this down, and where is the writer coming from, and is their analysis, what perspectives, what biases, what assumptions is their analysis of the movie rooted in? Because that's how it always goes, is, you know, the writer comes in with their own perspective. Their perspective informs how they then view what happened. And so that's kind of how I took it in. As I began to kind of ruminate and think on it myself, while I understand that critique of the movie, and I don't know if we want to go that deep into it, but, like, yeah, so like Killmonger as a character, right? Because I think he was the most kind of controversial and like polarizing, like, character within the movie, because he was kind of portrayed as a villain, but he wasn't a villain. And I think he was positioned as a villain. And I had a Facebook post, and I called it my Killmonger theory, which was basically, if you fight their hero, you will be their villain. You know what I'm saying? Regardless of what your actual cause is. And that was, like, my takeaway from Killmonger's character, was that I don't know if he was necessarily the villain. He just fought the hero. He just got into a fight with the hero. You know what I mean? Yeah. He got into a fight with the dude that the movie was named after. I don't know if that's necessarily equated it into him being a villain. You know what I'm saying? And so that was the thing that I think some people who critique the movie in that way missed, was that if you saw him as a villain, I think that says more about your perception of him rather than, like, was he actually a villain? Like, because was his cause actually wrong? Maybe his method. And then as I started to get into the conversation, well, he was using a colonial. He was running sets out the master's playbook.
Yep.
You know what I mean? And so that in that, you know, I would say, but he had a colonial mindset. So was he a revolutionary radical character? No. What he wanted was just, right? His cause was just, but was he the radical revolutionary that some folks tried to paint him out to be, and folks that said, well, he was painted as a villain even though he had this radical agenda, and because he had this radical agenda, then this movie is detrimental to Black Americans because it's saying that this Black liberation or Black American liberation or whatever, however you want to frame it up, is a villainous calling. And it's like, nah, not really. Basically, you know, Wakanda has a right to, like, engage with the colonials on their own, on their own terms, right?
Yep.
And that's what it boiled down to. It's like, you know, was Wakanda wrong? In a sense, yeah, they had a separate isolationist mentality. But in the end, like, isn't that what we always have wanted as Black folks? Like, the opportunity to be like, you know, we will engage on our own terms. And nobody, not even one, somebody that looks like us, is going to come in and force us to engage in a way that is not, well, we don't have self-determination. And as Black people, that's all we've really ever wanted, is self-determination. Is the right to be able to say, I'm going to do this way, and I don't have to battle your perception, your prejudice. I don't have to navigate that. I don't have to negotiate that. I can just go out and do this in a way that I want to do this on my own terms. And that's what Wakanda was kind of fighting for. They weren't necessarily fighting Killmonger. They were fighting for the fact that, yo, if we're going to engage, because there were folks within the camp that were ready to engage. But we need to engage in a thoughtful way, we need to engage on our own terms. And yeah. I think that is a noble cause, and I think that is something that's worth it. Because again, he was definitely running, you know, he's definitely running the master, running sets, you know, plays out of the master's playbook. And so it's like, yeah, I get that. So that was my take on that as I broke down those critiques.
Yeah.
I feel you, but let's think about it. Let's take it a step further and really break down. What was he on? You know what I mean? Like, what was he on? Was he coming with like a very different perspective on how Wakanda would go about engaging and empowering folks? Or was he just like, yo, this is what we did in, you know, Contra, so let's just run that back.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, so yeah. What were your thoughts?
Oh, I have many, many thoughts. Many thoughts. But I'll say this. There were two categories of responses that I read. One was getting into the ideas that you were just talking about, which are, does Killmonger represent maybe the lower class, you know, and whereas Wakanda represents upper class blacks. And so, you know, there's a thing there. Isolationism. There's also, you know, the very old, you know, Malcolm versus Martin, WB versus Booker T kind of perspective on what's progress mean. Does it mean tear the whole thing down? Does it mean get along, become part of the system, extract what you can? You know, those kind of ideas. And so I loved that they pretty much played around with that within a superhero movie, which, you know, a superhero movie is pretty simple. Hero is shown. Hero goes through tribulations. Hero, you know, it ends up conquering issues. Like, you know how that's going to go. I can't, especially in a Marvel thing, you knew Black Panther wasn't really ever going to die. You know, so spoiler alert, if you haven't watched Black Panther, you probably should not be listening to this podcast. But that stuff I enjoyed. And if it stokes kind of conversation, fine. That's great. The second category, which was more the likes of, wow, I wish black people got as excited about Wakanda as they did about voting or something like that. Like, try to make like those. And those are just hate. People angry at the fact that people find joy in a movie. And so, you know, they kind of say, like, well, it ain't all that, and there's really other problems that are more important than a movie. And it's like, oh, of course. No one out here is saying, like, oh, because of this, I don't think we have any issues with police killing folks. Or, you know, like, no one is saying that. So the second bit, I found those kind of to be hilarious, and just people just mad at people being happy about something, which is, I think, the textbook definition of being a hater. To be clear, like, if you're just mad because people are excited and happy, you're a hater. There's just no other way around that.
Right.
But the other stuff I enjoyed, I think Coogler and it, they these guys definitely tied all those strings in, and it wasn't meant, I think, to have any overarching, oh, aha, this is what it is. It was just, hey, we have a way to build the story in a way that builds on kind of these tensions. And, you know, why not? You know, the idea of T'Challa as the reluctant king, I've always loved him from the comic books to the Coates, you know, reboots. Him as this very powerful person, but reluctant to take on the mantle. Man, they just nailed that ethos. I mean, and of course the acting was insane. And then Killmonger, I mean, the scene with him and Sterling K. Brown in his apartment, like, it didn't really hit me until I watched it the second time how powerful that scene is. And this is the part that always gets me, and this might be because now I'm a dad and I have a son, and I'm like, oh my God, like, what the hell's happening? You know, like, now I start getting emotional in movies, where before I was like, ah, that's whatever. Now I'm like, no, wait. When he's just like, so no tears for me, right? It was like, okay, like, we're here. You don't seem sad. And that's when he kind of saw, like, man, regardless of what I was trying to do in a community and all stuff, I have obviously failed by not being around for this kid, because now he has just adopted this very, you know, kind of blasé view about life and death. And that's not what I wanted. And so there were just a lot of powerful moments in this movie that were all steeped in the black experience that were also just good that I think everyone appreciated. People who aren't black can watch this thing and say, like, that's a powerful moment, right? And so
yeah.
that's the beauty of it. And I think that's why it's going to make, you know, $3 billion or something crazy.
Right.
It's not because black folks are watching it. It's because everyone's watching it, and it translates generally. So, you know, you can be mad at Black Panther being popular. You can be, you know, mad and say, like, oh, I wish Killmonger didn't die at the end. But, you know, bring it back to your point, there's a difference between an antagonist and a villain. And Killmonger was the antagonist.
Right.
The antagonist goes against the protagonist. But it doesn't mean that the antagonist is a monster or is a villain. And if anything,
right.
it's a story about how tragedy leads to, you know, lose-lose situations. One moment in 1992 with Too Short playing in the back in Oakland led to two guys that probably in any other circumstance would be friends and, you know, brothers, led them to, you know, duel to the death. And that's really what the story is about to me.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, all of that. All of that.
And I still got one more viewing.
The hate. Yeah, right. I'm trying to get in one more myself, especially just there's so many powerful scenes, many powerful scenes and so much powerful dialogue. The thing that always resonates with me is that when his father, when T'Challa and T'Chaka are in the ancestral plane and he's talking to him, and he shows deference to his father by kneeling, and he's like, boy, get up, you the king.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just that idea, like, stand up, man. It's your turn now.
Yeah.
You got to, you know. And again, as a dad, you know, at some point being able to pass something on to your son, it's like, look, man, you're not a child anymore. You got this. You know, like, you're in charge. This is your show, and you need to recognize that it's your show, and you need to act as such going forward.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I'm not. This is on you now. You know, so act like it's on you and take control. And just those moments that, again, really humanize the story, humanize the characters in a way that oftentimes African-American characters don't get humanized.
Often.
Right. It's just fantastic. Just fantastic, man. And the sister, you know, if I raise any type of a black girl, I want to raise a Shuri, man. Just brilliant, right? Just brilliant, witty, charismatic.
Fearless.
Just
fearless.
Yes. Just right there. I mean, that was so. There were a couple of things that I, you know, just like armchair. Like if I got to give footnotes, you know, I work with high school kids. So they're like, well, what is the movie about? Because you know, I came to school dressed. Like I was like dressed for the movie just to show kids like this. You could, I'm gonna have some fun tonight. You know, and they're like, Mr. Flowers, what you dressed like that for? I was like, I'm going to see Black Panther, and you'd be surprised at how many young folks didn't know what I was going to see.
Wow.
At least in Wisconsin, you know. Yeah, and you know, it's something. If it don't happen, you know, there's a saying that I always throw out. If it don't happen on Snapchat, they ain't gonna know about it.
Gosh,
you know, but.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So, you know, as in kind of recapping the movie to some of the young folks at the high school, you know, I'm like, well, you know, there's a couple of things that I took from it. One, even black superheroes got it harder than the white superheroes. Like Tony Stark gets to fight aliens and cyborgs, and he's done.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? T'Challa, he got to fight aliens and cyborgs and then fight, you know, white supremacy in his spare time. Like, what are we really doing here? You know what I'm saying? When he's not fighting aliens and cyborgs, you know what I mean? He's got to fight the police industrial complex on the side. Are you kidding me?
Still can't catch a cab in Manhattan. This is where
you know what I'm saying? He's got to fight white capitalist patriarchy. You know what I'm saying?
All true.
You know.
All true.
And the other thing, you know, they ask, well, Mr. Flowers, who's Black Panther and what does he do? Like, what is his power? I was like, you know what, when you really boil it down, you know, his power, his superpower is his community. I mean, he got some sisters that roll with him. You know, he got his mom. You know, he got some elders that are giving him advice. Really, without them, he ain't really nothing but a dude in suit. You know, but that's
he drinks the flower that gives him the power of the Black Panther.
But that comes from his land. That comes from the land. You know what I'm saying? That's something he's, that's a resource that he's taken from his community. You know, so basically, this dude is simply a byproduct of his environment, right? And because his environment has poured all of this goodness into this dude, he is what he is, right? And how does that relate to then how we bring up our children in community? Mm. What do we pour into them? And then what do we get back, right? And so, like, when you look at Black Panther, you're seeing an example of when you pour love and guidance and wisdom into a child, what they can grow into, in many of those characters. But T'Challa specifically, like, you can build a superhero metaphorically. And that's what as an educator, that's what we should be trying to do. Right. Just on so many levels, just looking at it, in those ways and breaking it down to folks as to why it's such an impactful film when you really start to really dig into it, and just the themes that are there. And again, a lot of what you get from it says more about you than necessarily the intention of the director, which that's beautiful art though. You know?
Yeah. Well, I after that piece about pouring into, I have to leave it at that. I had not even really thought of it in that way. And that's super profound. I'm going to have to just think on that. And figure out how I can explain that to my 7-year-old when he sees somebody's throat getting slit, and he's like, "Dad, why did you take me to this movie?" Son, the community is gonna pour into you the way Forrest Whitaker pours this.
You will thrive.
You'll be okay.
You will thrive. Well, see, my kids have been to several. They're superhero movie vets because their dad's a Marvel geek like that. So they're superhero movie vets. And so when T'Challa got thrown into the ravine, they were like, "Nah, he's good." They didn't flinch. Talking to my 9-year-old, she was like, "Well, I knew he wasn't." You know, we went home and their mom asked him about the movie and asked him, like, "So who's your favorite character?" And, you know, my 9-year-old was like, "Well, I never got worried. T'Challa wasn't going to die. The movie's called Black Panther." Like, it's named after him. He wasn't going to die. It's called Black Panther. Like, so I knew he was going to be fine.
And they still enjoyed it.
And they still loved it, man. They still loved it. So, yeah. So maybe he'll be all right. He'll be all right.
I hope so. Either way, he's going. Yeah. He done said yes. No backseat. So we're going. So if the
next call, I
tell you my son has been traumatized, you can help walk me through how to get him back to trusting me again.
I'll see what I can do for you, man. Thinking about the album that accompanied the film, what were your thoughts on that, given that this is kind of a music podcast? What were your thoughts on Kendrick's work on the album? First off, did you enjoy it?
I did. I'm biased, although, like, Vincent Staples is on this, and I was like, "Yeah, this ain't that bad." You know, he's talking about Black Panther. This is great. I thought it was good. I'm, in general, very down on the album music inspired by stuff because it's, you know, you're forcing these artists to really come up with stuff on the spot in a condensed time frame about a certain topic. Like, I'm never a fan of it. It just seems contrived. But this movie is unique in that these are like themes that I think Kendrick probably would have been writing about anyway, and some of these other folks. So his stuff is great. I thought Schoolboy was great. Anything that Anderson .Paak is on, I think I automatically like. Anything he touches to me is just gold. So the track he has with Absol, I think it might be my favorite on the album. So in general, I liked it. I played it like at work, just to go put this on the background while I'm grading papers. Like, it's got that kind of a vibe. Like, you can kind of play on the background. Are there bangers on that? I guess what is the song? I mean, well, the Black Panther song, I'm not all that crazy about, but it's fine. There's songs that they're fine. There's nothing here I'd probably listen to if the movie wasn't attached to it, but they're all good.
Agreed. On all accounts there. I enjoyed it a lot. I usually don't get into those kind of things. The soundtracky, don't really. I mean, not since the golden age of the soundtrack. Have I gotten to a soundtrack?
Yeah, like Above the Rim.
But yeah, right. The show, all those goodies. This one I dug, and I enjoyed it a lot. I enjoyed like the sound and how it's still, even though it's a lot of different folks putting their hands on it, it's still got a very cohesive vibe to it. And no doubt, Anderson .Paak, we're both here on him. I mean, we're right there on him. He's the same way. Like, if he's on something, like, I'm going to enjoy that song. I don't know why. I'm going to enjoy that song. He just got a vibe to him that I dig.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, he just got that Zeitgeist right now where it's just like, yeah, this dude speaks to me. And so, like, I'd say my favorite joint on it, I like Big Shot, the one right before the end, and I think it's him, and I think
Travis,
I can't remember who else is on it. Yeah. And so I like that one. I like the vibe of that one, but it's all. There's nothing that's like, okay, I gotta listen to this 10 times. But it's all like, I don't turn any of the songs. I don't skip any of the songs. Like, if I'm listening to it and it's playing and I'll put it on shuffle, I'll play it straight through. However I play it, I let it play. Which again, for something of this nature, is solid. That's a testament in itself to the quality of the work that was done on the soundtrack. So as we wrap this up, we got about 3 minutes left. 2018, what will it bring? And what are you looking forward to as we start to get deeper into this new year? February is closing out today. March is going to begin. So what's on your radar right now?
Yeah, so first I'm thinking, has anything come out yet? Nothing. There were no January, February releases, right? Not a full album, aside from the Black Panther album, right?
Yeah, not that I am in digging.
Okay. All right. And normally, Q1 is normally quiet.
Dropped.
Yes. Yeah. Okay,
Nipsey
it was Nipsey Hussle.
Just dropped. Yeah,
okay.
his new one. But other than that, there's nothing I've been checking for.
I'll probably check that out. Okay, so the ones, and I think you alluded to one of these already. So there is, and these are all like rumored projects. Who knows if they'll come out this year? But
I was going to say, yeah, exactly. Nowadays, when I was doing my research, I was like, ooh, like, are these even coming out on this? It's not like it was. It's not like it was back in our day where you could go into Sam Goody and have like it out. Which joints were coming out when? It's just not that. We're not there. So
the big one is Black Star. And so this I read at least two separate articles that said Black Star, Talib Kweli, and the artist formerly known as Mos Def. I refuse to call him whatever the new name he has.
Agreed.
They're supposed to be coming out with something in 2018, and it's the piece that got me excited was they're doing a one producer type thing, and it is Madlib. So Madlib is supposed to be the cat bringing them together, right? And so that kind of got me excited just because, A, those two together, if anyone can bring them together and actually recapture the lightning in the bottle from, shoot, they're at that release, that was almost 20 years ago. It could be.
It might have been 20 years ago because I think I was still in high school. So
it'd have to be someone like Madlib, who in my view is kind of like closest living person we have to like J Dilla. You know, aside maybe from, Yeah, I mean, as far as being able to capture that sound, being somewhat quirky, but also with a laser vision on concepts, because those two artists need a guide. So
yeah.
That's the one big one. And the other one was Black Thought, who made my list, my Hip Hop Year in Review, even though he didn't have an album, for just that 10-minute, I don't even know what you'd call it, just a rap attack. I'm going to go
right.
Old school. That he did on Flex. But apparently he's got a project with Ninth Wonder. And that's in the making.
Yes.
So
yeah.
If those two drop in 2018, it'll be a good year. The other stuff will come out. Like, oh, Migos dropped. That's the other thing that dropped in 2018.
Yes.
So, like, Migos drop. Like, that stuff's going to drop. Drake's going to drop. Some other people going to drop. Like, it'll be fine. But, like, if those two come out in 2018, I'm going to be on, like, all right, I got to sit down, put my headphones on, and just listen to this at very high volume straight through while I read the liner notes.
Right. Yes, the ritual, right? The ritual.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, youngest
so
nowadays
won't
understand that ritual. So Prime, Royce and Premier is one that's definitely on my radar of one that I am. And that one, I think, has a pretty solid date of March 16th, where that one will be dropping. So I will be checking for that one in the immediate future. And, you know, the first one I really enjoyed, I love the combo of Royce and Primo. And they did some really good stuff on their last one. Had some real bangers on there that I enjoy. So I'm looking forward to see what they do this time. You know, it's rumored J. Cole is going to be on it. Rumored M's going to be on it. Rumored Kendrick's going to be on it. We will see.
Whoa.
Rhapsody's
yeah. supposed to be on it.
Yeah. So it's the first one was very much kind of focused on Preem and Royce kind of coalescing over music and kind of coming together. And I think this one now, they're going to have some other folks engaged and involved. We just talked about the cat, Anderson .Paak. He's supposed to have something coming out. He's supposed to be working with Dre.
Oof.
Yeah. So I am, that one, I'm like, come on, I'm fanning myself. Like, I can't wait for this one. You know what I mean? Like, let's get it, you know? So that one I'm kind of really, really excited about because, I just enjoy Anderson .Paak's work. I mean, from the No Worry stuff to any guest spots he does to his own stuff, like, it all just resonates. I just feel it. I dig it. I enjoy it. He hasn't disappointed me yet with anything where I'm like, I'm not really feeling that. So I'm going to keep coming back until he hits me off with a brick. but so far it hasn't happened yet. The other one, which is right now just really rumored, but I'm a huge fan, Pusha T is supposedly in, because he only drops every so often. But I'm a big Pusha T fan. I've been a big Pusha T fan since, you know, the Funeral, the first Clips joint.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So
mm-hmm.
I've been a big fan of the Clips and Pusha T since way back, which that song is probably getting close to 20 years old now.
Yeah. Yeah.
If he is able to put something out this year, for me that'll make my year because I've always enjoyed his work and you know he still sticks to kind of the Clips formula of very sparse kind of soundscapes, but just that the biting lyricism that he always brings and the sharpness I just enjoy so. Those are some that I'm looking forward to as 2018 kind of rounds out. And, of course, you get the heavy hitters, the Drakes and folks like that that'll throw things out there that will tide you over until these kind of personal favorites kind of hit the ground.
Palate cleansers. It's all good.
Yep.
It's all good.
Yep. So, well, that'll do it, man. It was good hollering with you, man, and rapping with you. Let me know how it goes with your son. Hit me up on Twitter. Let me know how the viewing goes with your son, man. But yeah, enjoy it. It's a great movie. There are very few movies where I want to see them three times, and there's so many layers to it that I feel like I need to see it three times. But yeah, So enjoy yourself, man. This will do it for this edition of Hustle and Flows. Any parting shots you want to give, Sekou?
No, that's it. Let's make sure we get back on this thing. Well, you said we got an album coming out in April.
Yeah.
When's Prime? No, you said March.
Prime.
That's
March
2 weeks.
March 16.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, let's have a Prime pod.
Let's do that.
Let's get on it. Let's get regular. The basketball season's over for you. My basketball watching season is over, so I'm in. Let's do this thing.
All right. Let's make it happen. All right, bro.
I'll talk to you.
All right, man. Peace.